And welcome back. There is a new game in town when it comes to local journalism here in the St. Louis region. It's an online service called Real-Time STL. It bills itself as a source of information for, quote, busy people, presented in a chatty and inviting way, making it easy to find information you need, unquote. Kurt Greenbaum is the editorial director of Real-Time STL. He's a veteran journalist, formerly with the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and former regional editor of St. Louis Patch, another project with sharply defined focus on local and neighborhood news. Kurt Greenbaum joins us in studio, as does Amber Hinesley, journalism professor at St. Louis University. Thank you both for being with us. Nice to have you.
Great. Thanks. To be here. Thanks, Don.
Kurt, let me begin with you and ask you what Real-Time STL is going to offer that isn't already out there.
Well, we think it offers something to readers in as much as we're bringing together sources of information from all over the St. Louis area, and we're trying to organize this in a way so that readers can really find out what people are talking about in St. Louis. So what you'll find on Real-Time STL, really prominent on the site, are the sorts of stories, blog posts, videos, and whatnot that are published by any publisher in the area. Based on what people are talking about, based on social media. So that's really what it is we're trying to bring to the table here. It's sort of a one-stop shop, again, based on what are the things that are on people's minds and they're sharing and talking about.
Yeah. But it would seem to me that there is plenty of opportunity to do that right now. There's an awful lot of stuff out there.
There are Facebook's 10th anniversary is today, for example, and that's an easy way to keep up with what your friends are sharing. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things about Facebook, of course, is there's no geographic focus to that. It's any friends that you have, wherever they live, sharing the things that they want to share. What we're really trying to bring is a real focus on the St. Louis area. So it's about what people are publishing or talking about in St. Louis, or what's being published elsewhere that people are talking about that affects St. Louis. So an example would be one of the first stories that we curated was a Forbes article about the interesting ways young women are using clothes from Build-A-Bear Workshop, which is, of course, St. Louis-based. And that's a perfect example of the kind of story that maybe folks in St. Louis wouldn't have found if some folks hadn't already been talking about it, and then we could bring it to the fore for people to find out more.
Amber, what do you make of all of this?
Well, you know, as a former journalist myself, I think my initial reaction was, you know, if this was me, how does it help me get my news and information out there to have someone else other than the organization I work for putting my stories, my content out there? And so Kurt and I were talking about this actually before the show. As a journalist, you want to have ownership of your material. And so there's part of me that thinks, hey, wait, that's not the site that I intended this to go out on. But it's an exciting opportunity for journalists and news organizations in St. Louis to get their information out there to people who might not see it in other ways. And so you've kind of got this twofold, you know, question of, well, you know, is this okay that they're, you know, taking this information and putting it out there other than the original site, but offering it to people who maybe wouldn't have seen it otherwise?
Well, I've talked to a number of journalists who don't think it's okay, Kurt. they don't like the idea at all of you kind of pirating their stuff, putting your logo on the page, which is, it's not very prominent, but nonetheless it's there, giving the indication that kind of you have ownership of it.
And I'm not surprised to hear that there might be some of that reaction. I will tell you that before we launched the site, we actually made visits to folks that I know and that I respect at a number of the television stations in the area, at the Post-Dispatch, and we gave them a presentation about Real-Time STL in advance so that they knew what was coming and what we were trying to do. You're right. We do have a small and I appreciate you mentioning it's we try to keep it very low-key, a small presence for our branding along the top so that people can find their way back to other stuff that we're curating. But we're really trying to keep that in the background and make sure that the content we're curating and presenting is the most prominent thing. And the traffic to that content, I should be very clear, is going to the original content publisher. We're not taking anything away from that publisher in terms of the traffic and the visitors that they're getting to their site. And I think the other thing I want to make sure to make clear is we're also And it's very clear on our site, if you've read some of our material there, we're not selling advertising around other people's content. That's just not going to happen. And that's we're very clear about that. We don't want to monetize somebody else's content and treat it as if it's ours when it's not.
What is the business plan? Obviously, you're not doing it as a charitable enterprise.
There are places on our site where we can and will be selling advertising. And the way we like to look at it is we think there are opportunities in what we're presenting where we're adding value to the content that we're trying to curate. We're trying to make it easy for people to find it. In terms of the way we organize it and the way we present it on our own pages. And those are the places where we think we can make money and advertise. And so that's obviously a big part of what's in our future.
Amber Hinesley, is this where journalism is going?
It's certainly one direction that it's heading in. You see sites like this all over the internet where people are curating news content. And so, you know, like Kurt said, they're not making money off of it, that you run into copyright issues and some big ethical issues with that. And so finding other ways, other revenue streams that, you know, I think in some ways news organizations are like, oh, we wish we would have thought of that. That's maybe a way we could have made some money off of our mm-hmm. content. You know, and so one of the questions I have looking ahead is what happens if news organizations start putting up more paywalls? You know, most of the news organizations here in St. Louis don't have paywalls on their sites where you don't have to pay to read their content. And so I guess just for Kurt, I'm wondering what happens if we start to see this trend popping up in St. Louis where there are paywalls up on some of these sites that where you are curating the content?
Well, and we'll have to confront that when the situation comes around. I think I've read that the Post-Dispatch has considered doing that exact sort of thing. A lot of times in those models, those are not paywalls per se, but they are you get access to a certain number of pages before you're asked to pony up and pay something.
That's the Times model, New York Times.
Exactly, exactly. And so our audience is probably not going to be the audience that's the power user of a particular site and is going to hit as many pages as might be required to get to the paywall. But, I mean, the other thing that I would say is I want to keep the lines of communication open with publishers like the Post-Dispatch as well as local bloggers in the community. So if they have questions or issues, or if we have questions that we want to be in a position to have that conversation and say, our aim is to make your content available to people in as easy and as seamless a way as possible. How can we work together? Is there a way we can do that?
How much original content are you capable of generating?
Well, I don't know if I could break it down into a percentage.
I've seen a 10 to 15% percentage.
Yeah. I mean, I think it might be in that neighborhood. We're only just starting. We have a blog where we are doing some different forms of aggregation and some original reporting as well. We do a weekday video called The Sift, which is original content that we produce Monday through Friday. And that also is designed to really highlight some of, you know, if our site at large is about what people are talking about, The Sift is supposed to be sort of the cream of the crop of the things that people are talking about or that are trending in the area.
How large a staff do you have?
We have a small staff of, I believe it's in the neighborhood of 10 part-time trained curators who are working for us. And then there are three editorial employees specifically. I'm the editorial director. We have a curator in chief, and our senior editor, Gabrielle Biondo, is the host of the Sift.
How do you handle breaking news? Everybody has to have breaking news these days. If you watch television at all, every story is a breaking story. But how do you handle that? Suppose there's a major tragedy downtown.
Yeah, I mean, and we've had a lot of conversations about that. You'd be surprised, actually, how quickly, and I think, you know, Amber and I were talking about how people get news on social media. We have custom-built software for our site that helps us monitor the social media conversations that are going on in the community. Breaking news hits social media almost instantly, and that's part of how we can get it onto our site as fast as we can. So that's one of the things that we've seen. It doesn't take very long for us to be able to curate a piece of breaking news and get it on our site. We have also, you know, since we've launched, we haven't had this sort of story, the prototypical arch falling down type story. But if that were to happen, that's another opportunity for us to use our blog and kind of curate and aggregate some of the highlights of what different publishers are producing about that story and drive traffic to each of those stories from there.
Amber, this brings another thought to mind with regard to using social media. Obviously, it's ubiquitous, the new most popular word of the day, I've come to find out. Omnipresent is another one. It's all over the place, but it's very, very hard to judge and assess the credibility of a lot of this stuff. How do you look at that?
That's actually something that I talk a lot about with my students. And we talk about media literacy and particularly digital literacy. And so how do you judge what's good information on social media? And really, it comes down to the credibility of the source. And so this is, again, where something that Real Time SDL can, I think, help themselves and establish themselves as a credible source, you know, information to go to for anything about St. Louis. And so there's an opportunity for media of all types to use social media as a place to establish themselves as a credible source with continual updates, breaking news, you know, as well as other types of information that they can put out there and to be a continuous source of that. Because social media, especially mobile news, that's the growth industry right now in journalism. Mm-hmm. That's where you actually see a lot of growth happening in terms of monetary as well as information availability.
Do you have concerns about that?
I'm a social media geek, and you know, but again, as a former journalist, you only get, you know, 140 characters on Twitter, and so mm-hmm. it's very hard to establish credibility and to really tell the story on a platform like Twitter. You know, Facebook gives you a little bit more flexibility with that. Social media is a great place, though, as a journalist to go and find sources, to find out what news is happening, what are people talking about. So as a journalist, it's a great way to keep the pulse of the community, as well as to find sources and find stories. So I think it's a phenomenal reporting tool for journalists.
As long as the information that you're reporting is accurate and,
right.
and fair.
Right. Well, and you know, as journalists, we joke that, you know, you don't believe that your mother loves you unless you confirm it with three other sources. It's the same rules apply to social media, is you don't just take one source as the gospel truth. You verify with other sources, whether it's on social media or actually picking up the phone and calling someone, which is what we used to have to do back in the day.
Kurt, pick up on that point, if you will. You get a tweet from someone, the arch has fallen down. What do you do from that point on?
Yeah, that's – I'm glad you gave me the chance to follow up on that, because I think media literacy is really important to what we talk about around our newsroom and with our curators as well. All of our curators are trained very carefully about what to look for, and they're – part of what they do is add sort of rating metrics and categorization to the content that we're curating on the site. So in the example that you're talking about, if somebody tweets a link to I'll give you an example. Somebody last week tweeted a link to an article about Nathan Fillion from the television star from Castle coming to St. Louis in April for St. Louis Comic Con. That is a big story in a section or in a community of interest in the St. Louis area. When that story comes in because somebody tweeted a link to it, one of our curators can look at it, read it, evaluate it, weigh it against the reputation of that site is, what other sources might be saying, and give that a rating, so it can, which helps determine how prominent it might be played on our site, along with a variety of other metrics.
You keep using the word curator, which I suppose is one that you're trying to fit into this niche that you're working on here. Would I be calling them editors in another format?
You know, I think the definition of an editor probably that's a really fair question. I don't know the answer to that. We sort of think of them as distinct because they are looking at content and evaluating it in a different way, perhaps, than I would as a word editor or a newspaper editor might be doing. They're not changing the content. They're not editing it in that sense. They are evaluating it on a variety of metrics that we ask those curators to look at. How relevant is it to this particular category or not? What tags need to be on that piece of content so that it's easy for readers to find it? Those are the sorts of things that they're doing.
What level of experience do your curators have?
They are anywhere from beginning entry-level type journalism folks. Some of them have more marketing experience as opposed to strictly journalism experience. But they all are come out of the content area. They have experience working with content. Most of them actually have journalism experience, specifically working for news organizations. But some of them come more from the marketing side, and we're training them to do the sorts of things that we're looking for those curators to do.
Amber, what are you hearing here?
Well, actually, just thinking back to, again, when I was in the newsroom and I was an editor, and what we're calling curators is actually a lot of what editors, you know, used to do. And so I see the job has changed in some ways. And so they're maybe not editing the words so much. But if you think about people who do, you know, they're editors on websites, News Corporation websites, part of what that job is to decide where is this story or where is this photo going to get played on our website. You know, in reality, that's what real-time STL curators are doing. They're maybe in some ways a little bit more scientific about it with the metrics you're giving them to decide ratings and things like that. Some news organizations that I've gone and observed in don't have the same, I guess, thoughtfulness that goes into where to place things on their websites or what gets pushed out through social media. And so for me, it's interesting. I would love to just come and be a fly on the wall at Real-Time STL to see how decisions are being made, because it's being made by editors, which is great, rather than just relying solely on the logarithms, because that's, I think, maybe going a little bit too far in relying on the science and math of things too much, because journalism at its heart, you know, it's a science of passion.
Sure.
And you have to have, I think, people making those decisions.
You're invited. Consider yourself invited. We'd love to have you over. And, you know, I want to sort of tag on to what Amber's talking about here a little. Part of what we're doing does involve some of those algorithms. You know, if you do a search on Google, there is an algorithm behind that that helps raise to the top of the list the search results that Google thinks you might be the most interested in. And that's part of the secret sauce that's behind real-time STL as well. But part of what factors into that algorithm is some of the ratings that and some of the metadata, if you will, that the curators are adding to the content. But we're also measuring how recently was a story posted. How many times has it been shared on social media since it was posted, and how frequently and in how short a time was it shared? All of these sorts of things get factored in to help us give you that presentation that says, here's what people are talking about.
Is it fair to say that most or much of the time certainly used by your curators is running searches for things that say St. Louis?
No, actually, that's part of what the software that I mentioned earlier is all about. That is out there kind of scooping it up and bringing it into a content management system that then our curators have access to. They dive in there and they can see, based on an initial pass through our algorithm, what they need to be curating and how quickly. So, for example, something that prototypical breaking news story that gets shared really frequently, immediately, that rises very quickly to the list of stories that the curators need to turn their attention to.
You were associated with Patch before this latest enterprise. What is the status of Patch in the St. Louis area now? I know they're having troubles on a national basis. How about locally?
Well, I'll tell you. The sites are still up. They're still there. They are essentially being managed remotely from outside of the St. Louis area, but there is nobody in St. Louis running those sites at this point, which I don't mind telling you, it breaks my heart. I really loved working for Patch. I thought it was a really good idea, and I miss it. But it's certainly not the same site that it was, say, a year ago.
Doesn't this tell us, Amber, that this is a very risky business that that folks are like Kurt are getting into here? I mean, a lot of people out there are trying a lot of different things, trying to come up with a business plan that will work, make money, and move us ahead in this new world of digital journalism.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the big buzzwords in journalism today is entrepreneurship. And you have to approach going into journalism with sort of an entrepreneurship attitude and not being afraid to fail. I have a good friend who works at CNN Online, and one of their mantras is fail fast. And this idea of we'll try anything, you know, for a while and see how it works. And I think that that's an exciting opportunity for a lot of people who maybe wouldn't have had a way to get into journalism in the traditional way that journalism has operated. And so there's a lot of opportunity out there for people to get into journalism in new ways, such as what they're doing with STL today. You know, Patch had the backing of AOL, which is a huge, huge corporation. You know, and there's a lot of reasons why Patch didn't work. You know, and I loved Patch, the emphasis on local news. And so real-time STL provides that, you know, specifically in the St. Louis area. And so it's maybe filling a niche that Patch has left open with its demise.
Would you say this is really a valuable online service for St. Louisans?
Well, it's interesting you ask that, because I was talking with my class right before I came on about the value of news. And in the business world, there's this idea of inferior goods, and is news an inferior good, and that people won't pay for it because they don't see the value in it. They'll spend 99 cents on iTunes to buy a song because they can listen to it over and over again, but they don't want to pay for a subscription to a news site, whether it's monthly. And so what, you know, is as real-time STL increasing the value of news because they're getting it out to a wider audience, or is that actually fueling this inferior value of news because there's now another source to get it?
I'll give you 15 seconds, Kurt, to respond to that.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think we're increasing the value because we are trying to make sure people in perhaps a very busy world are having access to the kinds of stories that people – their community is talking about. So that's what we're looking for.
That's Kurt Greenbaum. He is the editorial director of Real-Time STL. Thank you so much for being with us. Amber Hinesley of St. Louis University Journalism Professor, thank you. Real-Time STL is the website. Check it out. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the prevention and treatment of heart disease, and then we'll take another look at the new downtown bridge and how construction gives us a glimpse into the past, or gave us a glimpse into the past, I should say. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at sdlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.